2015, New Vrindavan, 11, 12, 13.
Today is New Year's by the Christian calendar. The Gaudiya Vaishnava calendar worships Sri Gaura Purnima in March as our New Year's. What can we learn from this juncture? Years. What do we observe on the three junctures of the day? Dawn, when the goddess of dawn dispels the darkness. Noon, the transition from morning to afternoon. And dusk, another transition. All three times, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur emphasizes we should remember the lotus feet of our spiritual master. Any junction closes one chapter and opens a new. And the new beginning will set a trend for what is to follow. Srimad Bhagavatam emphasizes that every rising and setting of the sun diminishes the life of the mortal body. But for the devotees who are practicing spiritual life, every rising and setting of the sun marks one day closer to eternal life and is therefore an opportunity for celebration, hope, and gratitude. New Year's marks the end of the holiday season, beginning with Christmas, a time when the mantra, which is not only sung, but also practiced to a large degree. Peace on earth, goodwill to men, is very prominent. You see that during this period, simply by remembrance of such great souls as Jesus of Nazareth, St. Nicholas of Turkey. People become good-natured, kind-hearted, charitable, peaceful, grateful, simply by remembrance of the great souls who are like luminaries to grant some light, some wisdom, some direction, like guiding stars in this world of darkness. My grandfather, who fought in World War I, told me about Christmas Eve on the front lines in France when the Germans on the one side, French and Americans on the other, were waging fierce. And at New Year's Eve, the constant roar of the cannons and gunfire, and shouts and screams, was replaced when, in the darkness and silence, rose Christmas carols, which is a form of kirtan. In French and English on one side, and German on the other, but the distinctions between friends and enemies dissipated. And as the Christmas carols blended, a spirit of peace and goodwill ensued. And the soldiers began exchanging with one another and even with their enemies. Their photo albums of family members and food and gifts. Even between the enemy soldiers, they were united as friends for a time. The only thing lacking was duration. Because the next day, the entropy erupted again. This blazing, roaring fire, which destroys nations, communities, movements, religions, is based on the, is kindled, ignited by the friction between different souls. We're all really in competition with one another for the position of enjoyer. And the real peace formula, which grants enduring friendship and kindness in this world, is found in Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktaramya Vitavasam, Sarvaloka Maheshwara. Simply acknowledging that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, the benefactor of all sacrifices and austerities, the lord of all the universal managers on their different planetary systems, and most of all, the best friend of all living entities. By acknowledging that, by watering that root of the tree of life, we attain peace from the pangs of material miseries, from the conflagration of samsara. We find this demonstrated in Krishna's lila, which is an outer manifestation of the battle which ensues within the heart. When the infant Krishna takes birth and all the darkness and all the demons and devils are challenged and our fear of material existence, who is Kamsa in Krishna Lila, sends his various demons to seek out and destroy the child who came to answer the prophecy. The eighth baby of your daughter will be your death. So Kamsa sent his different demons, who learned by the example of all their predecessors how to not to try to kill Krishna. So they all tried novel means. And as the cowherd boys were tending the calves in Bandirabhan, which is a forest which also serves as the base camp for their sporting leelas with each other. And they were so absorbed in playing with Krishna, the cows wandered off into a swampy region, which made it difficult for them to escape any danger, and the cowherd boys were distracted. Until they realized that in the midst of their childhood play, they lost track of the movement of the cows, which to them was their sustenance. And since their prime duty in life was protection, and serving and pleasing the cows. They were frantic, so they but their expert cowherds can trace out the path the cows have taken by the little nibbled grass and the hoof prints and the manure dropped along the way. And they followed the trail, and on an elevated bluff they saw the cows in the distance. And Krishna waved his charter like a flag and called out to them, each one by name. And they very lovingly and ran to Krishna. And he embraced them and hugged them by the necks. And they licked him. And it was such an exchange of love. It was being monitored by one of the agents of Kamsa, who invoked a circle of raging fire which reached for the skies and surrounded the boys in this fierce inferno. Their first instinct was to protect Krishna, and they gathered in a circle around him. But as his flames reached for the sky and the burning embers were showering upon them, they realized, we can't protect Krishna, we can't even protect ourselves. Their next instinct was to call out to Krishna for the protection, for his protection. But they thought he would be more responsive if they called out, hey Krishna, Mahabhago, please protect us and your cows, which would naturally infer that he would protect himself, without which they could not even live. So he told them, just close your eyes. And they looked at Krishna and said, you've got to be kidding. How is closing our eyes going to save you or us from this inferno? And then they began speculating amongst themselves. What's he going to do if we close our eyes? Probably he's going to chant some mantras, which are not effective if anybody's watching. So they concluded we should close our eyes. He did not realize what Krishna was actually thinking, because his heart is very deep. He was thinking that the one time that he ate a little bit of that sacred, sweet dust of Vrindavan, Mother Yashoda was so disturbed. And if she ever heard, because the gopas could not stop talking about what Krishna did during the day, that was the endless kirtan of Braj, 24 hours of kirtan, what Krishna did today. And it would surely get back to Mother Yashoda if he swallowed the fire. So he could not let that be seen. Furthermore, he knew if the boys even saw Krishna swallow fire, they would die, which would defeat the whole purpose. So close your eyes. And out of faith, they did. Therefore, they did not witness that Krishna swallowed that inferno. And then he told them, open your eyes. And they did. And they were in a fresh, beautiful, fragrant, blossoming meadow. And flowers were just falling from the skies as the demigods praised Krishna for his wonderful deeds. This is Bandirada, base camp of Krishna's pastimes of herding cows and wrestling with gopas. He came back to the Bandirada tree and embraced the tree. Spoke so kindly to it, Kalpavriksha tree. And then that tree, to serve Krishna, formed its exposed roots into a very natural kind of crown, a throne. And Krishna, who is the emperor of Ras, he's Rasaraj. All Rasa is contained within him. He knows it, he feels it, but he cannot taste it. Because to relish the flavor of loving exchange requires plurality of souls. You can't do it alone. However beautiful a dawn or sunset may be, or an autumn day, you can't really relish it by yourself. You have to share it with someone. Why? In the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. And it's emphasized in its purport. We cannot imitate the cowards. They're too exalted for that. But we must follow in their footsteps to achieve that sweet flavor of love for Krishna, not as the superhuman Godhead he is, but as a tender human child who enters into domestic relationships as the perfect servant, the best friend, most charming lover. So even Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, accepted the role of a sannyasi to perform that difficult path of renunciation in pursuance of the path tread by the gopis. And to hear from such a soul, or Shukadeva Goswami, who is Brahman realized even in the womb of his mother, and decided he just preferred to stay there. A perfect place to meditate upon Brahman, the womb of your mother. Dark, secluded, miserable. He did not want to be born, because entering into material life means so many distractions, so many disturbances, conflicts, temptations, illusions. So he stayed in the womb for 16 years. And only when he heard the charming pastimes of Krishna was he enlivened to come out and render service, which culminated in his revealing to Maharaj Pariksit the question that he faced, knowing that his death was imminent. What is the purpose of life? Relevant questions for all of us. Why are we suffering? Any scriptural literature, any spiritual endeavor, any devotional undertaking begins with an invocation, which means offering of prayers and requesting blessings, which is our only means of success. So, the instructions, the guidance on this field of life, which is filled with conflict, is exemplified in Arjuna's dilemma, where duty called him to wage a war with friends, family members, teachers and gurus. And this great warrior, Arjuna, overcome with grief, pale and trembling, dropped his bow and told his chariot driver, "O Govinda, I shall not fight." And Krishna spoke words of wisdom through which the whole world can find the answers to our challenges in life. After the initial few chapters of friendly dialogue on many topics, when Arjuna is faced with the reality of the situation, he addresses Krishna as, "Now you're in the position of my guru. I'm a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me as your disciple." And he prayed that Krishna instruct him And Krishna, in the following chapters, describes proper action according to duty. And Arjuna asked a relevant question. We all want to act properly, but what is it that forces a person to act improperly, even against his own will? And Krishna revealed that it's lust only, which is born from rajaguna, the mode of passion, and has an appetite like fire. And is seated in the senses and the mind and the intellect, and bewilders the soul, and covers its true knowledge. The desire to please our senses, or the mind, or the intellect, various forms of lust. However, they may be disguised, whereas actual love means the desire to please the Lord. And in so doing, by rendering devotional service, watering the metaphorical root of the tree of life, the whole tree flourishes, which means what? All the branches, twigs, leaves, and flowers flourish and blossom and bear fruit, meaning that if you simply love Krishna, then you will have to love every living entity who is both his parts and parcels and carries Krishna within their hearts. How could a person who has the slightest fragrance of love of God hate any living entity? In the pastimes of Haridas Thakur, when he was taken to court and sentenced to death in the most disgraceful, torturous, humiliating manner, assaulted by all those brutal Muslim executioners ganging up on him in a public exhibition to beat him to death, he was only praying for their welfare. It is not by conflict that enmity is stilled, enmity is killed, but only by love is envy stilled. The words of Haridas and all the great souls should echo and resound in our consciousness if we really desire to follow in the footsteps of such great souls. And worst of all is when the soul is infected with this disease of love, it cannot understand this disease of lust. It cannot understand the pastimes of love, regardless of whatever academic or intellectual prowess we may master. The only means of actual understanding the transcendental science is revelation, which is proportionate to our surrender. Srila Prabhupada emphasized, don't try to see Krishna, but try to serve in such a tender, attentive, devotional, affectionate way that Krishna wants to see you. Because when he wants to see you, then you will see him. Not by the ascending process of rising up with your intellectual academic prowess, but by humble surrender will Krishna be attracted to reveal himself within your hearts. The full range of rasas and perspectives was revealed when Krishna was enticed to attend a wrestling match arranged by Kamsa. Who knew that Krishna wouldn't accept his invitation? So he sent Akura, who was his minister, and Krishna's uncle and friend and devotee. Go invite Krishna to a sport. Krishna likes to wrestle. Invite him to my wrestling arena. So Krishna came. It was a setup by Kamsa. to pit this tender, charming child against these monstrous killers, Chana and Mushtika. And the Jadus and Kshatriyas of Bhatra were intimidated to attend because of fear of offending Kamsa. So the assembly was quite full. When Krishna entered the arena, and everyone saw him differently according to their own individual mentality. The Jadus saw Krishna as their hero. The young girls saw him as Cupid. The yogis saw him as Paramatma. The gyanis saw him as the Brahmajyoti. The atheists saw him as ordinary. The wrestlers saw him as a thunderbolt. Kamsa saw him as death personified. The parents in the assembly saw him as the most perfect child. Vasudeva and Devaki saw them only as their loving son. The anthropomorphic tendency is to ascribe mundane human traits upon the deity. And we all have this propensity to project our own qualities onto Krishna. And that's why we're warned, don't try to imitate Krishna, especially in pastimes like that of Rasalila, which will make it poison, which will kill your spiritual life. Simultaneously, we have to hear Krishna's Brajlila because this is the only antidote to the lust which will poison our existence. So for the welfare of the world, Shukadeva Goswami, in answering Maharaj Pariksit's imminent question, what is the duty of man, especially at that critical hour of death? And the answer in a nutshell was to constantly hear and chant the pastimes of Krishna. So in the wrestling arena, Krishna did not really find the complete satisfaction he yearned for, because he's, as we said, Rasa Raj, he's the emperor of Ras. All rasas are contained within him. But rasa, all the metaphors are liquid, which means the taste is in the flow of loving exchange, and Krishna can't experience that himself. He's like a surabhi cow who can deliver any kind of nectar you want, but it takes a cowherd with affection to draw out the love, to induce it to flow, to collect it and distribute it to others. And the best cowherds are the gopas and gopis of Raja. They draw the sweetest flavor of ras from Krishna, reveal it to the world, and share it with anyone who would participate through submissive oral reception. Which means the discipline of sadhana bhakti as instructed by Gurudev. In that same Mandira region, Kamsa sent another demon, Pralamba, who imitated perfectly the cowherd boys. In their games of cops and robbers and lambs and lions and whatever the game, the consequence was, if you won, you got to ride the person you defeated, you got to ride him on his shoulders. And if you lost, you had to carry him on your shoulders. So in the pastime which ensued, Balaram won, and he got to ride this cowherd boy. And Krishna lost, and he had to carry Sri Dhamma on his shoulders, riding him like a horse. So Balaram is riding this sweet, charming little cowherd boy who lost in his game. And suddenly, this little gopa turned into this hideous monster and began running away from the Bandira forest, which was the base camp of Krishna's loving pastimes. And Balaram was thinking, this is not part of the game, that he's taking me away from Krishna and my friends. What's he doing? As he's growing into this monster as tall as the sky, and he realized, this is not a gopa at all. This is a demon imposter. And Balaram, first he got scared that maybe he'll hurt me. No, he can't hurt, but maybe there's another one taking Krishna for a ride. So then he got mad and he struck him in the head. And those tender lotus-like hands of Balaram became like thunderbolts cracking the skull of Pralamba, and he fell down dead. What does this represent in terms of what transpires in our own hearts and communities as we take to the path of sadhana bhakti? Who is this imposter that tries to steal away guru from our hearts? That's Mayavad, the ideology which is always trying to infiltrate the Vaishnava camp. And deprive us of the life-sustaining nectar of loving relationships. Because if you succumb to the Mayavad, then ultimately, you're God, and I'm God, we're all God. Which has severe consequences, because then how can we serve Krishna? How can we play with Krishna? How can we exchange love with Krishna and his devotees? And therefore it's death to the soul. So Krishna, you know, and he loves to wrestle with gopas. But whatever his pastimes, Braj Leela, everything is tinged with that golden luster of Radha's affection, which instills and inspires all the devotees to assist in the loving pastimes of Radha and Krishna, and whatever way, as a blade of grass, or a tree, or a cow, or a gopa, or whatever. And but one more reminder. This purport is emphasizing following the footsteps, not imitating. Because if we think in any way that Krishna is like us, I mean, he is in the sense that he's a person. But the pastimes of Braj are not infected with lust. The calm stated in this verse means desire, love. Calm means the desire to please your own senses. Love means the desire to please Krishna. And as Krishna reveals himself according to our consciousness, and even 5,000 years ago when he appeared, very few realized that he was God. And the dilemma can be resolved only by his mercy. When Lord Chaitanya was coming to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who concluded that he must teach him Vedanta, because he's a young sannyasi, who'll succumb to the temptations of Maya unless he's not fixed in Vedanta. And Gopinathacharya, a devotee, said, he does not need your instructions. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can I believe that? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is Brihaspati, the priest of the heavenly gods. How can I believe this? Where is it stated in the Shastra? How can I believe? And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya kept, how do you believe? That by his mercy, it's only my mercy. So, realization is the outcome of humble resignation, which opens a space within the heart that revelation can grow based on reciprocation humble, relevant inquiry, receiving relevant instructions, which blossom into realization if humble resignation opens that space within the heart for the pastimes to unfold. Krishna relishes loving pastimes. And who can most perfectly draw out the rasa within Krishna, inspire it to flow, collect it and distribute it, than the gopis of Braja? And Krishna relishes a flavor in that love that cannot be found in other rasas. So when he sat down in the natural throne made by the roots of the Bandhirava tree, he played that enchanting melody on his flute, which was intended to attract the heart of Radha, and it did. And when she approached like a timid deer, watching Krishna, his eyes closed, playing on his flute, she did not speak to just watch, but Krishna felt his presence, he opened his eyes, and he greeted the gopis. They had never been to this Bandhirabhat before, so they looked around and they saw the earth was very clean, as if it had been polished. And there was four pillars built out of stones, like, and then with white crystals between them, square, like some kind of arena. And Radha asked Krishna, "What kind of pastime do you play here?" And they looked around, there were swings, there were vines, but they were like, and actual swings, and then bars, you know, made of branches tied between trees for doing chin-ups. And up in the trees above was a treehouse. And she asked Krishna, "What kind of pastimes do you play here?" And he said, "This is the wrestling arena. I wrestle with gopis." And Srimati Radharani asked Krishna, "Do you ever win?" He said, "What? I always win. Except when I wrestle your brother, because he's a poor sport, and sometimes I have to pretend to lose so that he won't lose his spirit." And she said, "That's not the way he tells it. He says that he always wins, but he has to pretend to lose so that you don't get discouraged." And Krishna said, "That sounds like something your brother Sridhar would say." And then Lalita asked, "You know, we've never seen you dressed like a wrestler and going through the moves that a wrestler would make. Can you model for us, dress like a wrestler, and demonstrate these gestures that we've never seen?" He said, "No, we don't model, even for royalty, like yourselves, the royalty of Arshana. When we dress as wrestlers, we go into hand-to-hand combat. It's not for show, it's not play, it's serious, Krishna and his little gopis. It's serious. And we follow Hanuman's school of wrestling, which is what the Vanaras used to conquer Ravana." And Tokavidya said, "He's comparing us to Ravana?" He said, but, you know. And then Lalita asked, "But what if I challenge you to wrestle with the goddess of victory, Jayashree?" And Krishna said, "No, I can't accept a challenge like that, because I am a supreme victor in the wrestling arena, I can't challenge this 14-year-old gopi. And of that, she's tender because she's, you know, royalty. We'll need to challenge Krishna again. But if you're the Kshatri that you make yourself out to be, how can you refuse a challenge? If your father came to hear of it, and he will, he would hide his head in shame. And how would you ever be able to face him? And then Krishna pondered and said, well, I'll challenge you hundreds of thousands of gopis all together, and that might make a fair match. So very eager that his pastime potency was unfolding according to his desire, Krishna ran to Vrinda's storehouse, where all the attire for the gopas to dress as wrestlers was arranged. And he tied his yellow dhoti, hiked up that kind of short, you know, to his knees, with a bright orange sash made like a belt, and he took off his jewelry, left only those wristbands. He looked like a real wrestler. And the gopis ushered Radha to behind the tree, where they kind of pulled her dress up a little shorter to look like, and they unbraided her hair and took out all the decorations of peacock feathers and flowers and wrapped up the top knot on the top of her head, crisscrossed her veil across the front and back so that her pink sari wouldn't compromise the spirit of the wrestling match, and they came face to face, Krishna alone, facing hundreds and thousands of gopis, all arranged in the lotus-like formation, approaching Krishna and all pushing Radha out in front as they kind of hid behind her, when Krishna roared out, bellowing, Jai Hanuman Ji! And he smeared ghee upon the earth to worship her and rubs her. Dust turned off in between his hands, slapped his arms, and entered into mortal combat with the gopis. And quickly, he expanded into as many forms as the word gopis and caught them in the hold. But they were so graceful, they slipped out and teamed up on him and pinned him down in the center. And then he disappeared and grabbed them each again from behind. And they all ganged up on him and pinned him down in the center. And then all the gopis withdrew and made a circle, leaving only Radha and Krishna wrestling in the middle. And the bliss and the gestures and the movements was just like Rasalila, only it was wrestling. And in the combat, hand to hand, Krishna was losing strength due to Radha's touch, where she was gaining it. And until this point, all the fauna and flora had been so mesmerized by the wrestling match that they couldn't take sides. But as Radha gained the upper hand, and the gopis were cheering and slapping it down like, you know, the, what do you call them in the wrestling? Like, whatever they do. What do you call them? The what? Anyway. Goddess of victory is giving up her hand, and she pinned him down and caught him in a hole that he'd never experienced before, and he couldn't escape. And like a kirtan throughout the forest of Vrindavan, and Uddhava, who's being instructed here by Krishna, the 11th canto, which is reflections on the 10th canto, which is like his face. The forest Jai Shri, all glories to the goddess of victory, which gradually reverberated throughout the world. And when she held him down, pinned in the center of the circle of the gopis in the wrestling arena, Krishna finally had to groan, I surrender. In the 9th chapter, says, Man Manabhava Madhav, Adhatinam Bhaskara. He concludes the 18th chapter with a verse which is almost verbatim. The first two lines are, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your homage unto me, and then surely you will come to me. I promise this. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. In the 9th chapter, Krishna is talking about his devotee's love for him. In the 18th chapter, he's talking about the reciprocal love he feels towards his devotees. And he has to make his solemn promise, by remembering me, you will come to me. Because some think that Krishna was born in Mathura, the places of Kshatriyas, were formidable in martial skills and diplomacy, and therefore he can't necessarily believe anything they say at face value. Whereas in Braj, everyone simply speaks from the heart. In the wrestling arena, Krishna proved superior in martial skill and military arts and wrestling moves. But the prowess of love of the gopis subdued and conquered him. And this is the mystery of Krishna Lila, that he himself ponders. How is it that I am omnipotent, omniscient, all-powerful? How is it that the gopis overpower me? This is the mystery which Krishna ponders, excelled even by his promise, in whatever way my devotees approach me, I will reciprocate accordingly. This promise was broken in the face of the gopis. He cannot reciprocate their love. Krishna is the source of everything, but the love of the gopis is greater than his. How to reciprocate? This is the mystery, which is resolved only in the Gaudiya Vaishnav New Year's, which is Lord Brahma, which we can introduce today and contemplate for the next few months in loving anticipation of the dawning of the golden age due to the birth of the golden avatar. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments?
Yes. Maharaj, thank you for the political class. It says in the purport that the gopis, well, we know that the gopis are the most beautiful women in the world, and not only those beautiful, most qualified in all the emotional arts and everything. Sannyasis here, they completely, they don't think of those things at all, unless you're Krishna. We understand that beauty and talents from the presence of Queen Kruti are sometimes considered to be disqualifications for developing deep feelings for Krishna. So,
thank you for that wonderful question. The beauty and qualities and artistic skills of the gopis is simply an outgrowth of their internal love and an expression of their desire to please Krishna in the most wonderful ways. The same abilities in men and women of this world are usually skills that they cultivate for their own self-aggrandizement and are therefore a disqualification. Not that we shouldn't develop such skills and abilities and cultivate beautiful qualities and appearances, but keep it always focused on Krishna's pleasure, not our own selfish aggrandizement. That's the dividing line, whether it's a qualification or disqualification, whether it's for self or whether it's for Krishna's pleasure. Anything else? puja is words of Vishwanatha Thakur, we should remember our spiritual master, which is synonymous with remembering Krishna because we have no other way. And moon, when all you're thinking about is lunch, you might forget, but that's why you chant Gayatri at that junction. Consider what you're chanting as you say your Gayatri mantras, its obeisances and prayers of blessings. Our sadhana should be integrated with bhavana, contemplating what you're doing, and why you're doing it, and who you're doing it for. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.